You're listening to the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where Irish fitness entrepreneur Brian Keane answers your questions and interviews leaders in the world of fitness, health, mindset, and natural wellness. Come join the fun.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast. We talk everything fitness, nutrition, and mindset to help you with your goals. Today's episode is a Q&A, and I've pulled these from my Instagram, Brian Keane Fitness, and my Snapchat, BrianK019. So still spending quite a bit of time on both those platforms, particularly Instagram. I spend an ungodly amount of time on Instagram at the minute. So the questions are in from there. So hopefully you enjoy this week's episode. So first question, can you get visible abs with just diet alone? So this is something that I've spoken about quite a lot on my social media channels, about how to get abs, how to get your body fat low enough, the combination of either diet and training or training or diet alone in terms of getting abs. And there's a couple of angles I can take the question or the answer from. The short answer is yes, and the long answer is there are ways to get it faster and there are ways to get your abs more pronounced that may be more beneficial than just diet alone. So the short answer is yes. For the 95% of the population, most people have abs. It's just that they've got body fat covering it and you can't see the outline of them. There is about 5% of the population that genetically don't have them and have to physically train the abs, the rectus abdominis, the obliques to actually get them to shape, and so that when the body fat is low enough, you can see them. But for the majority of people, it's just a case of getting body fat low enough. So you can do this with just diet alone. If you are in a calorie deficit and you're able to reduce your body fat to the point that you have abs, you don't need to train at all. You don't need to do any training. You may not need to do any cardio, and you probably don't need to do any direct ab work, and you could still get visible abs where you have an outline. So the short answer is yes, you can. But the longer answer is, depending on your level of body fat, it can be a pretty slow process getting visible abs with just diet alone. Now, if you're already starting with a low level of body fat, you probably won't need to get it that much lower before you can see visible abs. And you can do this with diet alone. It's just significantly harder. The reason that people combine training and nutrition is because it speeds up results faster. One of the reasons that I personally find it very, very difficult to offer nutritional advice or design a nutritional plan or expand on just nutritional philosophies without knowing someone's training program is because your training program should feed into your nutrition and your nutrition should feed into your training program. And when you combine both, you get results faster. So for example, if you're trying to get visible abs and you're just going into a calorie deficit and trying to get your body fat down, it might take you 6, 8, 12, 24, 36 weeks to get your body fat low enough so that you can see visible abs. Whereas if you combine that with training, you could potentially half your time. Also, when you're designing a training program and visible abs are your goal, you can actually do exercises that are going to shape it and make it more, your abs more pronounced when you actually do reduce your body fat. So for example, I'll use my BKF online program because it gives good context to this answer. And there's lots of different variations of that program depending on each person's goal. If you're male, female, beginner, intermediate, advanced, whether you train at home or in a gym, there's different versions. But one of the principles that I follow in a lot of those versions, and we add this in for certain people who are trying to prioritize getting visible abs or getting a six pack, is using a day where there's actually ab-based training combined with cardio on a specific training day. So for example, what I quite like as a split is some variation of a push-pull leg split where you're hitting all your body parts, then a prioritization day. So for a guy, that might look like arms, chest, and abs. For a girl, that might look like glutes and hamstrings. And then a fifth day that's cardio and abs. The reason I quite like this in a training program is for one of two reasons. One, it allows you to prioritize your cardio so it can get your body fat down potentially faster. I like to combine low intensity steady state with high intensity interval training. And it allows you to do direct ab work so that the quality of your ab work is higher. One of the mistakes I made when I started training first was doing abs at the end of my workout when I was trying to prioritize bringing up my abs. And it's funny because one of the kind of unspoken rules in gym workouts is you do your abs at the end. And if you're trying to prioritize getting visible abs, you're probably better doing it at the start when you're fresher and you can squeeze and contract and feel the muscles better. What I like about doing a cardio and abs day is you can do this, where you do 2, 3, or 4 exercises on abs at the start of the workout when you're fresh, so the quality of it is high. You're squeezing through your core, you're squeezing through your abs, and you're working those muscles the same way as you work your shoulders or you work your glutes, and you're not just doing it at the end when you're fatigued and tired. And then you combine it with your cardio, it's going to potentially help you get your body fat low enough when you combine it with a nutritional strategy or combine it with a calorie deficit plan, and you can change the shape of your abs and you can make them look more pronounced and more visible, even though your body fat may not be as low as if you weren't doing any training at all. So for example, if you're doing a 6 week or 8 week or 12 week program where you're doing an abs day, where you're doing 3 or 4 high quality movements, squeezing and contracting and feeling the muscle, hitting it from different angles so that you're hitting serratus, obliques, your rectus abdominis, you're hitting everything in through your core, and then you're doing your cardio with it. If you were to do that exact same strategy with the nutritional plan where you're in a deficit over a 6, 8, or 12 week period, the way your abs and your stomach would look would be very, very different. When you're able to contract your abdominal muscles and you're able to work that directly, you don't need to reduce your body fat as low to make your abs more visible. The same way as if you never did any core work, you got to get your body fat considerably lower to show visible abs. So one of the reasons that I quite like doing a cardio and abs day is it allows you to focus on that high quality movement combined with your cardio to get your body fat down. So what I would advise is if you're looking to get visible abs, understand that there's lots of different ways to do it. You can do it with just diet alone. You can do it with just your training program, if potentially if it's putting you into a deficit. But combining both is what's going to do it the fastest. So getting into a nutritional deficit or calorie deficit with a nutritional plan that's in alignment with your goals, which is reducing your body fat, and combining it with direct ab work from different angles and doing your cardio that reduces your body fat, you're going to be able to do it faster. So that's kind of the main benefit of combining it as opposed to just doing it with diet alone. But understand that once your body fat is low enough and you're in that 95% of people who have abs and just there's body fat covering it, you're going to be able to do it with just your diet and your nutrition. It just may take a lot longer. Okay, next question. Do you think cutting can make you look bigger? So I'm going to keep this one quite short because the answer is yes. Even though you're technically not going to be bigger when you're cutting in most cases. So for those of you unfamiliar, cutting basically just means your body fat. You're lowering or you're focusing on lowering your body fat. So you're cutting off body fat. You're normally in a calorie deficit. You may be doing more cardio or you're manipulating your carbohydrate intake or your calorie intake to try and get your body fat lower. What can happen is certain demographics of people when they cut can look bigger. And I personally am one of those people that fall into that bracket. Generally, people who have quite a lot of lean muscle tend to fall into this bracket. And shorter people tend to fall into this bracket. I tend to fall into both because I'm very, very fucking short. 5'8 in heels. No, that's a joke. I'm 5'8. But cutting to make yourself look bigger depends on the person, as I said, and depends on your actual genetic makeup. And when you have a lot of muscle or lean muscle or you're short and stocky, when you reduce your body fat, it can give you the illusion of being bigger. And this is where there's a little bit of a thought process in the bodybuilding community of people that are either bikini competitors or bodybuilders or men's physique or fitness models, that cutting, it doesn't really matter what you weigh. It doesn't really matter what your muscle size is. It's all about the illusion of how that muscle looks. And that's effectively what cutting to make you look bigger is. When you have muscle around your shoulders and your chest and you've got a flat stomach, or you pulled in that body fat around your stomach and your lower back and that whole core region, it can give you the illusion of being a lot bigger, even though if you were to do measurements on your arms and shoulders and your actual weight on a scale, they would all be reduced. So it's very important to realize that when you're chasing numbers on a scale or chasing numbers on a circumference of your arm, that may not necessarily be the way you'll look your best, because when your body fat is lower and you're very symmetrical and you're working for a training program or you're working for goals that are in alignment with changing your body composition, so you have that aesthetic and nice looking physique, whether you're a guy or a girl, that comes down to your body composition as opposed to weight. It's one of the reasons that I so regularly speak about losing body fat versus losing weight. That losing body fat is reducing or losing fat on your body. Losing weight is reducing numbers on a scale. The same works in reverse for bulking or getting bigger. Getting bigger is just increasing that number on a scale, or getting heavier is increasing that number on a scale. Getting bigger is reducing the size, or increasing the size of the muscle. So the short answer is yes, that you can 100% look bigger by cutting, but it also comes down to your actual body compositional makeup, depending on how much lean muscle you have, and also your size. Your actual height and size can come into play here. I fall into that shorter bracket. I'm about 5'8", 5'9", about 84 kilos, 84, 85, depending on the day, depending on the time of the day. And the leaner I get and the lower my body fat gets, the bigger I tend to look. But I also fall into that bracket. If you're 6'1 or 6'2, you may find that when you cut down, you look weedier or skinnier. Same with girls, exact same applies here. So just be aware that there's a big difference between body composition and actual weight, whether that's cutting or bulking or getting bigger or getting smaller. So just be aware of that. And yes, in my opinion and in my personal experience, either with people or myself, when you cut and reduce your body fat, you can 100% look bigger. Okay, next question. How do I encourage my partner and or loved one to develop their own healthy mindset by consuming content such as yours or other well-regarded sources? I know for a fact it would help them, as it has helped me, but their cynicism of things like stoicism and self-help gets in the way. I'd appreciate it if you kept this question anonymous. So there's a couple of angles I can come at this from, because the truth is, what can happen in this situation when we're consuming information or reading books, and Stoic philosophy, for those of you that don't know, is just a lifestyle philosophy that is not being attached to any idea of how things should be. So a lot of you will have heard me mention people like Seneca or Marcus Aurelius, who was the former emperor of Rome. They were Stoic, they practiced Stoic philosophy. And it's just very much a nothing is good or bad, but thinking makes it so, and that we give attachment to every emotion or feeling that we have. It's something that has massively served me in my life and is something I regularly bring up on the podcast in different ways, shapes, and forms. And what can happen in this situation is when something benefits us so much, we want our loved ones or the people in our lives to share the same experience, because we know it's helping us feel happier within ourselves. But what can happen in this situation is when you force somebody to try and see something from your perspective, you can actually create more resistance to that ideal. And I spoke in a podcast episode recently, for those of you who are subscribed, about this similar question in the context of nutrition, where somebody had recently made a lifestyle change in their dietary habits, and they were eating healthier food choices, and they were trying to figure out how they would get their partner to do the same. And what can happen in this situation is when you tell somebody that, look, you should definitely read this book, or you should definitely eat this way, or you should definitely consume this information, it can add a wall in front of them and build up a barrier. People in general, not everybody, but it sounds like in this context, anyone that has a cynicism of self-help, which is, again, a place I would have been for a long period of my life, my early 20s, I wouldn't have listened or entertained the idea of stoicism. I wouldn't have entertained the ideas of a lot of things that I talk about right now, because I wasn't in a place to accept that information. And if somebody tried to force it on me, I would have came back with resistance. Particularly, that's my personality type. If I let myself go down that rabbit hole of not consistently trying to improve the way that I see things, I would consistently meet people with resistance on ideas that I didn't hold the same opinion of. And I very much now try and destroy my best loved ideas. I know Charles Darwin was a big fan, and Einstein were big fans of destroying their best loved ideas and giving up something, that a belief system that they hold at least once a year, or else the year was a complete waste. And constantly doing that for me allows me to see things from different perspectives. And what I would offer on this is, there's a very good chance if you start pushing stoicism or self-help books or my content or the mindset content into your partner's life, they're going to meet you with resistance. There's an old saying that you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. And all you can really do is live a life in congruency with the ideas and philosophies and principles that you're learning. And Gandhi said that be the change you want to see. And when you are the living embodiment of the ideas that you represent or consume, in this context, Stoic philosophy, not being attached to ideas, self-help, trying to improve yourself, or my content where you're just being mindful of, you know, different patterns that you may be living through or different ways that you're seeing the world and different stories you may be telling yourself. When you're living that, what can happen is that tends to be more powerful than pushing it in the face of somebody. Because when you're the change you want to see, you give people around you permission to do the same thing. And when you try and push it on them, people's automatic defense mechanism of resisting it tends to kick in. Whereas if you just live your all these amazing philosophies or principles in your own life and your partner can see that you're a better version of you, you're happier, you have more energy, you're able to put a positive spin on everything and you're just have an amazing energy to be around, she's eventually going to want to come around to that. And one of two things generally happen. In some cases, it'll do the complete opposite. It'll push you further and further away from one another, and then you've got to cross that bridge when you come to it. But in most cases, what happens is when you start to live a certain way and you're not pushing it on somebody, they tend to come around themselves because they'll start asking you questions. I will use the context of a fitness and nutrition because I've got a very readily available anecdote in my head that will hopefully give a little bit of context to this. I remember back when I was working one-to-one as a personal trainer and I had this girl come to me, we're very, very close friends. We meet every quarter for a coffee just to catch up. She was chronically obese. She had been sent by a doctor because she was just a couple of steps away from being full-blown diabetic. Our first workout was literally an hour of just going up and down the stairs of the gym because she couldn't do anything else. And she had never done any exercise. She was very, very, very overweight. And she came from an overweight family. And her family members were very, very unsupportive. Her mother and father were both diabetics from being overweight. They were very, very unsupportive of her trying to make those changes. And I remember for the first 2 months, her mom used to bake her cakes and used to bring her home chocolates and bring her home different foods and either consciously or subconsciously trying to sabotage what she was doing. And she just stuck to the process because she continues to be an unbelievably strong-minded person. And when she started to see her body change and she didn't push her lifestyle of bringing her lunchboxes to work with her, of going to the gym 3 to 4 times a week and walking other days of the week, she didn't push that on her family members. But what happened after 6 months, she dropped an incredible amount of weight. I remember, and this got an incredible amount of exposure on my social media channels, she sent me a Snapchat of being able to fit into a seat on an airplane because she was never able to fly in traditional seats because she was too heavy. And she was like, sent me a photo of her with the seatbelt in a normal traditional seat. She's like, first time in my life being able to sit in a traditional seatbelt or in a traditional seat on an airplane. And I posted that on my social media. And that response that she had of trusting the process and living her lifestyle in terms of making the food choices, doing the walks in the evening, coming to the gym and working with me was what she was doing at the time. Her family members after a year started to change their lifestyle and their patterns. And then she started prepping her meals and prepping extra. And they started eating sweet potato. They started eating broccoli. They started eating chicken. And as a result, her entire family, all of her immediate family, her brothers and sisters were all overweight as well, started to live more like her. She didn't push it on any of them. She literally just did her thing. And after a certain point, and I've spoke about this in the podcast in the past, I spoke about this in my book in the mindset section, that people in the beginning, when you're trying to make change in the beginning is really, really difficult. In the middle, it's really, really messy. And in the end, it's amazing and beautiful. And at the beginning, it's super difficult because the people around you generally don't be supportive. And they tend to hold opinions and perspectives on this moment in time. And they're consistently trying to pull you back. everybody meets with that resistance at some stage in their life, whether it's trying to make a physical change to their body, whether it's trying to make a change in a job or in a relationship or some area of your life where you're trying to personally improve, you'll be met with that resistance initially. So what you need to make sure now is when you are living that change yourself, that you're consistently living by those principles that are supporting you and you're doing that over time, those around you are going to be better as a result. Those around you are going to start adopting those principles and philosophies as a result. And you being the change you want to see tends to open up and give people permission to do that and understand that it works in all areas of life. But you got to focus on your thing. When you focus, I love the acronym for focus, follow on one course until success. Focus on the things that are supporting you and live your life in congruency with that. Live your life in alignment with that. And those around you will either come with you or they'll fall off. In most cases, those that want to make the change will come with you. So what I would offer in this context and use the story of my client, somebody I'm still super proud of and incredible what she's done, her before and after was just unbelievable. And it's a representation of how people are. When you do your thing and you're just living the life that you want to live and you're focused on your goal and your target and being the best version of you, you tend to bring your loved ones with you. So I would do that as opposed to saying, listen to Brian's podcast or giving her a book by Seneca or saying you should check out this video on self-help. Do your thing, focus on you by living those principles and she will come round to that. In 99 out of 100 cases, people with positive energies and positive life philosophies tend to rub off on the others. It also works in the negative sense. So very, very important that you monitor and continuously come back to the five people you spend the most time with. But that's how I would handle this situation, and hopefully it supports you a lot and helps you moving forward in being the best version of you and bringing your partner alongside with you. Okay, next question. I feel so lost in life. Have you any tips to help someone find their way or their purpose? So I actually did a full podcast on this a few months ago. It's one of my most downloaded podcasts, How to Find Your Life Purpose. So I would definitely recommend at the end of this episode, if this is an issue in your own life, to go check that out. I was one of those high end of quarter life crisis at 25 when I was living in London working full time as a teacher at 24 actually, and not knowing what direction I wanted to go in my life. I spoke about it in the mindset section of my book, of that it's more important to have your ladder at the bottom against the right wall than to be halfway up the ladder against the wrong wall. And that's kind of how I felt. I felt really lost and I felt like I was climbing the wrong ladder, and I wasn't happy with, you know, what direction my life was taking. So I've had a couple of ideas that I've been able to apply in my own life since I recorded that podcast. I also know I have significantly more downloads, and a lot more people subscribed and listening to the podcast now. So if you haven't checked out that episode, hopefully I'll be able to flesh it out a small bit here and you can check it out after if it's something that is an issue in your own life right now. But one of the things that I've found that has really helped me find purpose, and there's times that even though I'm very, very happy and grateful and feels unbelievable gratitude for the position that I'm in terms of the things, the way that I live my life, the people I get to be around, the jobs that I get to do, the content and the stuff that I get to create, there's still always that voice in the back of your head that's questioning, is this right? Is this what you want to do? Is this where you want to be? Is this where you want to go? And one of the questions that I ask myself, and I bring it back into a quadrant that allows me to see it visually. And I'm very, very visual in the way that I consume things, in the way that I learn, in the way that I'm able to articulate ideas. And for those of you who've been following the podcast a while, you know I use my four quadrants of health, wealth, love, and fulfillment. And I come back and I score those quadrants every, you know, month and scale them on a 1 to 10. My health, my energy, my well-being, my physical fitness, my wealth, money in my bank account, never having to worry about paying bills, my love, my relationships, my daughter, my mom, the people in my life, my inner circle, and my fulfillment, the things that make me hop out of bed in the morning, writing books, creating podcasts, working with people, the things that I would do for free, the things that I love. And I score my life in those four quadrants. And off that principle, when it came to me about consistently that nagging voice in the back of my head, am I moving in the right direction? Is my ladder against the right wall? I break my life into the four quadrants of the four W's, which is what, where, who, and when. And what I would offer for anybody that feels lost in life or is unsure of their purpose is to ask yourself those four W's. What is it that makes you feel alive? What is it that you love doing? What is it that you would do for free? What is it that makes you happy? What thing do you love talking about? What thing do you love spending time doing? For me, that's creating content. It's writing. It's recording podcasts. It's working with people on my programs, helping them transform their mindset, their fitness, their life, their composition. For me, it's my own physical fitness, training, my own meditation. Those things make me feel fulfilled. They make me want to get out of bed in the morning. That what, when I can answer and consistently come back to the fact that I'm doing this every single day and what I'm doing is making me happy and is making me feel a purpose, I know that I've got that quadrant right, so I can check off that list. So the question here is, what is it that makes you feel like you have purpose? What is it that makes you happy? What is it that makes you feel like you have meaning? That's one quadrant. The next one is where. Where is it that you're at your happiest? So for me, it's geographical and it's location-based. I have previously lived in London. I lived in London for 4 years. I've spent a lot of time in California. I've spent time living in Galway City. I spent time living in Dublin City. And for me, my where is where I grew up. So I live right now out in the country. There's about 200 people in my village. I have a small little cottage that I live in. It's just me and Holly, right beside where my parents grew up, or right beside where I grew up. My parents are beside me. And that's my where of where I'm most content. I don't even have fast enough internet to upload videos where my house is, so I can get my creative work done. I can schedule time to be around people closest to me, my family, my friends, my inner circle. And that location geographically is where I'm at my happiest. When I was living in cities, I'm always in an anxious state because the stimulation just sends me to the moon in terms of I get so many ideas and I can never switch my brain off. I had that living in London. I had that living in San Francisco. I had that living in Dublin and Galway City. My where is out in the country where it's quieter, where it's more serene. That's changed over time. And over the last several years, I've gravitated more towards that location. But ask yourself, where is it that you're at your happiest? Location wise, sometimes you can't control it. If you have a job or a family or a college or whatever it is, you may not have control of that, but you do have control of understanding where you're at your happiest and then making sure that you start putting that ladder against the right wall and climbing the ladder to the place where it is that you want to be long term. So first question is your what makes you happiest. Next is where. Where are you happiest? Where do you feel most at home? And where do you feel most at comfort and most at ease? That's the next question. The third quadrant is, in my opinion, the most important one. And that's who you're with. So I've spoken on the podcast in the past that you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with. And it's so fucking crucial that you audit your circle of people you spend the most time with. And those who is probably more important than the what, where, and when all combined. Because the people you're around, you're going to become the average of those people. If you're around positive people that are moving in the direction of the things that they're trying to achieve and becoming better versions of themselves, you're going to become that person. And I can nearly fucking guarantee from your question, if you're feeling lost in life and you're unsure of your purpose, there's a good chance the people around you are feeling very, very similar. So you either need to be a stronger version and a beacon of light and move in the direction of the thing that you're going to be happiest with, and then your friends will follow and they'll come with you, or you need to start gravitating more towards other people who are moving or have got purpose, who don't feel lost, who are moving towards the thing that make them feel fulfilled, because you'll start to get that energy and you'll start to see those patterns. I've spoken in other podcasts in the past about your reticular activation system, your cognitive neuroscience of your brain, the part of your brain that focuses on your environment. So the example I normally use is when you walk into a room full of people and you see somebody else with the same t-shirt or dress or shoes, you instantly go there and your focus goes there. That's your reticular activation system. There's loads of other things in your environment. There's loads of other things around you, but you focus on the shoes, you focus on the dress, or you focus on the t-shirt because that's what your mind is focused on. That comes from your reticular activation focused on the things that are in your environment. When you're around people who are moving in the direction of their purpose or moving in the direction of the thing that makes them excited. For some people, that's their family. It's being the best mom or dad they could be. For other people, it's their business, helping and serving more people. For somebody else, it's just changing their body composition so they have more energy and they feel better throughout the day. When you're around those people and you're around people who are moving to become better versions of themselves, that rubs off on you and that becomes the things that you see because their personality type and their energy is rubbing off on you. And in your reticular activation system, the part of your brain that tells you where to focus on, you start focusing on the same questions that they're asking. So the similar when you're listening to this podcast, now that I've said it, if these four quadrants, you're going to start questioning and seeing different things because I brought it into your conscious awareness. So ask yourself, who are those people you're spending the most time with? And you need to audit that circle because that is probably the most important thing for your happiness, for your purpose, and for fulfillment in life in general, that those people are either supporting you or they're moving in the direction of what they're trying to achieve and you're championing what they're doing and they're championing what you're doing. But if you're around negative people, if you're around people who are lost and are just have no aspiration to do anything in their life, then you're going to be that person as well. So you need to audit that and make sure that your five people that you're averaging around are either moving in that direction or they're supporting you becoming the best version of yourself. Otherwise, you're going to keep coming back to it and you're going to keep asking these questions about, I can't find my life, I can't find my purpose, I feel lost. And the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again. If you're spending time with the same people over and over again and you're feeling the same way and the same outcomes are coming, that's the definition of insanity. If you want something to change, you need to change something. Okay, the next one then combines with what I've said about the reticular activation system, the part of your brain that tells you where to focus on, that's your win. So whatever it is that you decide is the thing that makes you happy, what it is you want to do, where it is you want to be, who it is you want to be with, put a time frame and a realistic time frame in place of what it is you want to achieve. And there's an old Chinese proverb that the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago and the next best time to plant a tree is today. I would start this today. I would ask those questions of what makes you happy, where it is you want to be, who it is you want to be with, and then put a time frame and when you want to do it by. I know when I spoke about in the podcast episode last week about visualization that I have a time frame on things. I've got everything set into a year, 2 years, 5 years, and 10 years. The 1 year goals and the things I'm trying to achieve are very clear on what I'm doing. I'm not attached to how I get there, but I'm very, very clear on what it is I'm trying to achieve. It's a little bit looser with the 2 year goals, and 5 and 10 are a lot vaguer because the time frame is too long. But give yourself a time frame of when it is that you want to be in the situation or become the person that you want to become. But you got to ask those first three quadrants first, or ask those first three questions first. What is it that makes you happy? What is it that gives you purpose? What is it that gives you fulfillment? Where is it that you're at your happiest? Or where is it that you can become that person? Who are the people that are going to support that? And who are the people you need to be around to become that person? And then when can you do it by? So what I would do is make those decisions and make the life choices based on whatever your internal compass is pointing. I can't give you the key for happiness. I can't give you purpose. I can't tell you how to be not lost in life, but I can tell you what definitely not to do, and that is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. If you're consistently coming back and asking the question that I feel lost, I can't feel fulfillment, your ladder's not against the right wall. You're doing something wrong and you're getting a direct feedback. Life is giving you a direct feedback that you're not doing the thing you're supposed to be doing. Because when your ladder is up against the right wall and you're even at the bottom of it and your compass is pointing in the right direction, you feel fucking happier at the bottom of the ladder against the right wall than you did 3/4 of the way up against the ladder against the wrong wall. So I would advise, start asking those questions and leaning into the discomfort. You may not be happy with the answers you're getting. You may not be happy that the people you're around may not be supporting you. You may not be happy that you have to change something and lean into the discomfort of some of these questions. But what I can offer is if you do that and go tick by tick by tick by tick, ask yourself what, ask yourself where, ask yourself when, and ask yourself what, who, and ask yourself when, you're going to come out with answers that are going to give you a lot better and a lot clearer picture of the person you want to be. And hopefully it'll support you in some way, shape, or form moving towards your purpose or whatever word you want to put on that, moving towards meaning, moving towards a feeling of direction, or just being happier in general. At the end of the day, in my opinion, the people that are happy are the people that are winning. And it doesn't matter what that looks like. You know, if you're happy in your life and you've got no money, you've won. If you're happy in your life and you've got nobody around you, but you're happy and you love what you're doing, you love the isolation, you've won. If you're happy and all the traditional societal pressures of nice car, loads of money, attractive partner, you don't have any of that, but you're happy, you've won. So in my opinion, happiness and purpose are the same thing, but you got to start asking those questions and understand that if you keep doing what you're doing, you're going to keep getting what you're getting. Okay, next question, a little bit of a lighter one to finish on. Any tips for pulling birds that are way out of my league? So I wanted to answer this question on the podcast because I gave some tips and advice on a Snapchat Q&A recently, and I got a couple of direct messages back from people who applied this, and I wanted to flesh out what I spoke about just because, one, the actual practical advice, and two, the representation, which is a little bit more mindset based. So I'm going to go back and forth on this one with a little bit of tongue in cheek and a little bit of fun and humor alongside the actual mindset application or mindset outcomes that can come as a result of applying some of these tips. So the practical tip first. So one of the things that made me laugh at this question about pulling birds way out of your league, and just to word that in another way, pulling more attractive girls. So if you're a guy in a club looking to pull a really attractive girl, there's a lesson that I learned a while back that I felt like somebody had given me the winning lottery numbers. And that was that the really, really hot, super attractive girls in the clubs don't get chatted up that often. Now let me expand, because I didn't believe it when I first heard it. But having been lucky enough to have known and been friends with some really attractive girls, some really well-known models, some particularly fitness models in that space, they would regularly tell me that they didn't get chatted up that often, particularly out and about. Different now in 2018 when you can slide into the DM and you can message people directly, but on nights out in bars and clubs, the girls would tell me that they don't get chatted up that often. And what I realized was what happens is guys tend to get intimidated by the really attractive girls and nights out in clubs and bars. And as a result, they don't actually get chatted up that often. So what I would offer and the advice I offered on Snapchat that worked very, very well was approach the hottest girl in the club, because one of two things will happen. One, it will work out massively and she'll end up giving you her number, or you'll end up hooking up, or you'll end up setting a date for another time. Worst case scenario, she'll say no. And if you consistently talk to hotter girls and more attractive girls, the other girls who you quote unquote see as a 7 or an 8 will appear less intimidating, and you may not be as nervous talking to them. And as a result, you come across better and you're going to be able to give a better presentation or representation of yourself. So you have nothing to lose by chatting to the hot girl. And the reason I answered this question was, one, I wanted to end it on a little bit of a lighter note for one, but two, I got a message on my Instagram DM not so long ago with a guy who messaged me saying that he applied this exact rule. He was out in a nightclub in the UK and he went up and approached who he thought was the hottest girl in the club, and he ended up getting her number. They ended up going for a date and he messaged me a massive thank you message. I posted it on my story for those of you on my Instagram story. And what I wanted to expand on here is the representation that that can have in your life in all areas in general. And I live massively by the philosophy that how you do anything is how you do everything. And one of the, besides the practical tip of that piece of advice I was given by the attractive girls, particularly some of those model girls who told me they didn't get chatted up that often by guys, besides the practical tip that you could end up pulling somebody way out of your league, also leaning in and attacking things like that that are afraid and scary or that you may be afraid of, you end up becoming a way stronger version of you as a result. And one of the things, and I'm not so much now as somebody who turned 30 late last year, but particularly in my early 20s, I was semi-confident, but I also would never have approached the most attractive girl in the bar. I wouldn't have had the confidence and I wouldn't have had the opinion of myself that I would ever have a chance with the girl that I thought was the most attractive in a bar. And it's funny because if I had the mindset that I have now, I would have done a cost-benefit analysis on it and weighed up the pros and cons. And when your cons or when your pros massively outweigh your cons, there's a good chance that you should probably attempt that situation in any area of your life. And when one of the ways that I've been able to deal with anxiety in my life, one of the ways I've been able to deal with fear, one of the ways that I've been able to push the boundaries of my own personal limitations is doing those cost-benefit analysis and asking myself, what is the worst case scenario of what could happen here? And in the context of approaching the hottest girl in the bar, literally the worst case scenario is she laughs in your face and maybe throws a drink at you, and then there's a moment of embarrassment, super embarrassing for 2 or 3 minutes, and then the rest of the night goes on. That's literally the worst case scenario that can happen. The best case scenario is you end up chatting to somebody who you didn't think would talk back to you. You end up going on a couple of dates and you end up meeting the love of your life. That's literally the way up in the cost benefit, the pros compared to the cons. When you start approaching all the decisions that you make, and I like it in this context because it's very relative, particularly to any guys listening, but girls, it's the exact same. When you start approaching everything in your life in that way and weighing up the pros and the cons, and then realizing that the only thing is stopping you is fear of the situation, and realizing that fear, and I love the acronym for fear, I put this in the mindset section of the fitness mindset, is false evidence appearing real. It's a story you've made up about it. So when you start attacking the things that you're afraid of and you do a weigh up of the pros and cons, and when you have this ridiculous outweigh of potential what the upside could be compared to the downside, it's ridiculous not to take that chance and take that situation. So my advice, just to close this one out a little bit differently to normal, is I want you to ask yourself the question, what is it that you're afraid of that has a massive upside compared to its downside that you haven't done? I want you to have a think on that. That may be a girl that you like, that may be a guy that you like, that may be a job that you're afraid to go for, that may be just a situation in your life in general. What situation in your life are you afraid of? Who are you afraid of talking to? Who are you afraid of messaging? Who is it? What situation or environment are you afraid of being in, even though when you do weigh up the pros and the cons, the pros massively outweigh the cons. The upside massively outweighs the downside. Ask yourself, what is that situation right now? And also, if you need a little bit of accountability, hit me up on DM. I'm going to be checking my DMs after this podcast for the next 24 hours or so. If you want to be kept accountable on it, I won't post any of them, but you just want to put it, sometimes putting things out there visually and putting it into words and sending it to somebody, or even just writing it down for yourself, can give you a little bit more of a clarity on it. By all means, send me your DMs. I'll keep them private for anyone that doesn't want it posted. Send me your DMs. Ask or tell me, what is it that you are afraid of right now? What situation are you avoiding where the pros are so much outweighed by the cons? And hopefully just asking that question, and sometimes asking better questions, you get better answers. And it ties in nicely to tips for pulling birds way out of my league, which is definitely one of my favorite questions that came in on my Snapchat. They are very, very random ones on Snapchat because of the privacy element. So hopefully expanding on the relativeness in terms of mindset and how to approach life in general. And this wasn't just a pulling question. Hopefully you got some value from it too. Okay, one last thing before I close out today's podcast. I have been writing significantly more over the last few months than I have been previously. So if you are somebody that enjoys the medium of reading or have enjoyed my book, The Fitness Mindset, be sure you subscribe to my blog / newsletter on the website, briankeenfitness.com. I've been trying to send out something at least once a week, either in mindset or fitness, that is writing related, straight into your inbox. That's where I link in other podcast episodes that are relative to whatever topic I'm covering. writing. So if you enjoy any of my writing or you enjoy reading in general, be sure to head over to my website, briankeenfitness.com, and subscribe to the newsletter/blog. And every Friday that I'm able, and I've been doing this very, very consistently with the exception of the couple of weeks I was in Morocco for the Marathon de Sable, I've been sending out blog posts / newsletters in that format every Friday at 12 p.m. So be sure to head over to the website if it's something you're interested in, and hopefully it'll provide you a lot more value and expand on some of the topics I cover in the podcast with all the links to everything you need on there. So it's super easy and super handy. So massive thank you again for listening. For more on me, you can go to Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram's all Brian Key Fitness, Snapchat's Brian K019. Massive thank you for listening. Catch you all next week.